I think there's two weird things about the lectionary readings for this morning. The obvious one is, who decided that this was the Matthew reading for Father's Day? If you go back, it's like fathers and children killing each other and stuff like that. Just know that Jesus is being metaphorical there. Anyway. And then the second one actually is relevant to the message today. Last week we were in Romans 5, where we talked about how Paul was piecing together the problem that Jesus being raised from the dead solves. And that's actually not an easy question to deal with, or an easy issue to deal with, because the answer doesn't seem to be sin as we might call it. Because if you're a Jewish person living in the first century prior to the year 70, there are multiple ways to deal with your own personal sin as well as like the contamination you encounter. So in that sense, Jesus doesn't need to, quote, die for sins. But he did. And then he was raised from the dead. And so as Paul is tracing through this, and I'm sure this is the result of the inspiration of the Holy Spirit and a literal career of meditating on the scriptures and piecing all of this together, he realizes that the problem that Jesus being raised from the dead solves is death itself. That death is the ultimate consequence of the sin and destruction within our own lives. It is the curse of humanity, so to speak. And that is a big explosive moment. And he starts setting up what's coming next in chapter 6, where he said, you were part of that domain, the domain of death and sin. But you aren't anymore. The issue that I have with our reading for this morning is that it skips the way that we become part of that. And I don't know why. I'll register my complaint that nobody will ever, ever read. But the answer is actually baptism. And that's how chapter 6 starts. You were buried, therefore, in your baptism and raised to new life. That is how we, as the followers of Jesus, are connected to that moment or that new reality of resurrection. Now, there's a couple of things that we have to kind of, figure out first. Is that when Paul is talking about sin here in this moment, it's very easy for us to automatically think the bad things I did or something like that. Depending on your own personal condition, the bad things that that person did, because it would feel too vulnerable to talk about my own mistakes or something like that, which is not uncommon. And there are plenty of moments where Paul is talking about individual action as sin. But Paul is talking about something different here. And this whole section doesn't make a ton of sense until we actually see it for what it is. Paul is talking about identity. Like the realm in which you live. The identity that you carry everywhere you go. Which is why baptism is such a big deal. Baptism gives you a new identity. You are not marked as that old person that you were prior to baptism. You are now identified as somebody else, somebody different. You live in a different realm, which is the realm in which death has been defeated, including sin as that identity. Now, as he sets this up, this raises kind of a question of like, okay, so can I just do everything I want? Because I got a list, hypothetically, of course. And now Paul says, no. You don't, even though like the more sin there is, the more grace there is, which makes sense. Like the further down that path you are, the more that your identity is wrapped up as a person of sin and destruction to yourself and those around you, the more grace will be meaningful to you. Jesus even talks about that. Like, for somebody who has really, really messed up and they have received forgiveness, that is a much bigger deal than somebody who got a speeding ticket that one time, if that makes sense. So first off, Paul is saying, no, don't like just revel in that old way of doing things and being a certain way, because that's not who you are anymore. Your identity is not what you were as a human being born under the law, born with that human nature, that tendency to act selfishly and destroy ourselves and those around us, the part of you that complicates every relationship you've ever had, the part of you that has never really truly done anything good or altruistic because there's always been a selfish motive behind it. You know, the thing that we all share, all of that is what you were. Now you are in the Messiah. You've been buried with him. The last thing that really anyone, but ultimately sin can do to you is kill you. And then what? Well, it has no more claim because you're dead. And if you've been baptized into Jesus and into his death, you therefore died that death with him, and therefore it has no claim on you. Which means you are identified with God. Now, this has all kinds of wild implications. And we only have enough time to kind of work out maybe a couple. One of them is kind of a natural question, especially if you are anywhere near like the Lutheran theology, which whether you know it or not, you are by just the fact that you're here. But also more like Reformed and certain other kinds of ways of doing theology. You'll come up with this, raise this question of, yeah, but I still mess up, like constantly. And curiously enough, Paul is not necessarily directly dealing with that here. Because he seems to be more interested in our identity. At the same time, the fact that he's talking about our identity has a lot to say about that. How many of you have had something about your identity change? And even if it was a really good change, that change was difficult. I'll give you a silly example, because it's easier to start there. I moved from Southern California, and before that, I was on the San Francisco Peninsula. Those are really high-energy places to live. There are nice things about it. It's also exhausting. And so when I came here, my previous congregation, I think at the time, membership of like 1,600. There were 4 services. It was a lot. And I get here. I'm installed, and then 3 days later, Lent starts. And I was having a conversation. I know Janine, our former office admin, was there, and I don't remember who else was there. But I was sort of in that mode of thinking, which is not characteristic for me. But I was thinking, okay, so Lent's starting Wednesday, so, you know, in a couple of weeks, I want to be thinking about this, and maybe 6 weeks out, we should talk about this, and then 10 weeks out, and then Janine starts looking at me like I had a second nose, like, and I picked up on that and thought, what's going on? I'm in Albuquerque. Things move slower here. You know, never mind. We'll deal with that if it comes up. Awesome. But there was that moment of, you know, you forget where you are. You forget who you are. Or for those of you who've retired, I'm kind of asking, what's it like the next day? Do you think, oh, I've got work to... No, I don't. Yes. Or do you start driving like the people you live with crazy by inventing projects and things to do? Because that old identity is sort of... No elbowing each other. I saw that. But thank you for validating my point. The reality is that we, like, if we are given a new identity, a new personhood, a new set way of being, we are always going to feel the pull of what previously defined us. And the tricky thing is that if make the assumption, go with the assumption that you and I in our baptism have been given a new identity that is rooted in resurrection, infinite grace and mercy, the defeat of death, where we have this promise that God will do for Jesus, or God will do for us what he did for Jesus, and death will not have the final word over us. Given all of that, how often do we live as though that's not true? And how confusing can that be? Now, there are a couple of ways we can go about this. We can go the guilt-ridden route, and we can just verbally berate each other for messing up. I don't know about you, but that I've never found that helpful. I've never, you know, like old teachers and stuff like that, of which I have lots of baggage because I had undiagnosed ADHD, giving me a long list of ways that I've kind of messed all of this up and need to do better. It's never helped. And part of the point that Paul is making in a bigger, if we take a step back and look at chapters 4, 5, and 6 together, is that, yeah, there are remnants. There are moments of lapse. There are many ways that we can forget or confuse who we are with who we were. But thanks be to God that he sent Jesus. And in your baptism, that is not who you are anymore. That is simply not the way you are defined. That is not how God sees you. And the use of guilt to try and motivate and change behavior, therefore, it's a category mistake. Because it would be me trying to treat you as though you weren't part of God's family. You're not baptized into the resurrection of Jesus. Instead, what Paul explains is that there's a different motivation. Like, yeah, we're gonna mess up. That's how that works. And that's just a mistake. That's just a brief forgetting of who God has made you to be, which is a person baptized into Jesus, raised to new life, and therefore you are someone over whom sin has no claim. This opens up some other really, really profound things. Have you ever encountered, and if you know somebody like this, now's not the time to nudge. Have you ever encountered somebody who can't admit when they're wrong? I'm identifying myself as that person, I don't like to be wrong. I don't think anybody here likes to be wrong. Why? I mean, sometimes it can feel like death. Or to realize that we're the bad guy in this story. We're the ones that are causing the problems. We have this natural inclination to fight against that. It's called being defensive. To push it that away as far as we can, because if we admit that reality or that truth about us, we feel like it would destroy us. The problem is that all assumes our past identity. Apart from Jesus, that may actually be true. But if your identity is rooted in the death and resurrection of Jesus, like that is the moment, that is the reality that defines us, and any lapse, any mistake, any sin committed, to use more biblical language, is ultimately a category mistake. It's a confusion of who we are. It's a forgetting of our identity. It's, to go back to my other example, it's forgetting that I'm in Albuquerque right now and not California. Any mistake like that, It doesn't define you. And because it doesn't define you, I've found over long periods of time, and ideally a little bit of personal growth, that it's easier to actually just say, yeah, you know what, I did that. Yeah, sometimes that's true about me. Yeah, I've made those mistakes. And it's so much easier to admit and just be open and honest about it, because that's no longer what defines me. If those things did define me, then yeah, I'd hide every single one of them. But they don't. Because as Paul says, you have been given this new identity. You are people of the resurrection, people of new life, where sin and its ultimate consequence, death, doesn't claim you anymore. You are now part of God's family. Now, I had a professor at seminary, Joel Okamoto, who, I don't even know if he ever intended this, but he was just excellent at these one-liners that make you go, oh, slow down, that also tend to be very simple. In the conversation about God's family, he said, who chooses who gets to be part of God's family? God does. Maybe I'm slow, but I found that so enlightening. Because I know I've been baptized, and ideally, hopefully, everyone here has been baptized, and if you have not, and that interests you, please come and talk to me. It means that we are part of God's family. And if it's God that gets to choose who's part of his family, then he chose you. And he chose me. Which means he then has given you that new identity. And if I were, very hypothetically speaking, the enemy of anything to do with Jesus, meaning my goal is to sabotage that message of grace and resurrection, if my goal was to drag you back down to the earth, if my goal was to pull as hard as I could in the hopes that you would relinquish that identity and not live in it anymore, to make you as miserable and spiritually destroyed or as spiritually dead as possible, my goal would be to convince you that you've messed up so badly that identity no longer sticks. Even though it was God who gave me or gave you that identity. In other words, if that were my goal, I would take every opportunity to take every mistake that you've ever made and punish you with it and convince you that that is what defines you. The gospel, the good news of what Jesus accomplished, is the opposite of that. That this was God's choice. He rescued you. He sent Jesus to die in your place, to defeat death for you. He has pulled you into his family. Sometimes it may have felt like you were kicking and screaming, but it is what it is. And Martin Luther would talk about this a lot, and many, many Christians throughout the millennia along with him would say very similar things. When you are faced with those moments of intense doubt, guilt, and shame over the mistakes you have made, or the mistakes you find yourself caught up in the moment, it's very helpful, at least for me, to take a step back and say, yeah, you're right. So what? Yeah, I did those. I wish I hadn't. But as bad as those are, the grace of Jesus, his defeat of my own sin and inner darkness, as well as the defeat of death, it covers all of that. And then some. So as we make our way through chapter 6 in Romans, Paul has now built up through the story of salvation, beginning really with Abraham and his descendants, and then this radical, wild moment when all of the world is included in what Jesus has done. The invitation is to everybody, bringing everybody together. He has purchased us, won us from our own sin and death because of what Jesus did, costing him everything. He has then drowned you in the waters of baptism. He has pulled you up into new life, where death and sin and the darkness and mistakes that we have all made don't affect our identity, because we are identified with Jesus as opposed to anything else. And then as we make our way into chapter 7 next week, we'll see that there are big cosmic consequences in the best way possible. Amen. As you are able, please rise.